So I'm really excited that my next guest is on the line with me this afternoon. He's Michael Gamal, and what an interesting guy he is. Before I get to talk to him, though, I just want to point out that those who know me know that anything and everything to do with identity is something that absolutely fascinates me. Maybe it's because we're South African, maybe it's not, I don't know. But those stories of the Secret Service German in the Stasi who suddenly wakes up one morning and the wall is down and has to confront everything he's ever held as dear and true. The South African racist who believed that black people were inferior, and then apartheid ends and then lands up marrying a black woman. Those are the stories that really blow me away and interest me like none other. And today we have somebody exactly in that ilk. He's Michael Gamal. I came across him whilst watching the Yasmin Mohammed podcast. The title of the particular episode was From Free Palestine to Free Thinker. Boy, what a journey you have been on, Michael. Thank you for joining me on Chai FM this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Michael, your story is unique. You were born a Coptic Orthodox Christian, you converted to Islam. Talk to me about that. This issue of identity fascinates me. Why would one do that?
I never had a strong Christian identity. I think for me, going to a Catholic school Monday through Friday and then a Coptic, you know, church on Sunday, it was almost like it was sort of beaten to death almost. So I never really felt strongly about Christianity. And if you ask me today, to this day, you know, I would tell you I probably know more about Islam than I do Christianity. Islam, I think later, much later in life, provided sort of some sort of like validation for how I felt towards Israel and Jewish people. And it was more ideological rather than faith-based.
You see, that blows me away right there, because having grown up in an Egyptian family, Copts presumably some sort of inverted commas, and I don't know if it's inverted commas, persecuted minority, it seems strange that you'd want to take over the identity of the inverted commas oppressor.
Yeah, I mean, it's only within really over the last couple of years where the Coptic identity has really set in. I grew up feeling, you know, sort of too Egyptian for Americans. And when I started meeting Arabs and Muslims around the time I entered college, I felt like that identity was sort of more befitting, because just because of the overlap, you know, they had similar immigrant stories. We spoke the same language, just, you know, maybe different dialects. But I felt like I was part of this bigger mosaic of Arab culture. And that's what resonated with me more as a young adult. So, and, you know, Arab nationalism, I would sort of define that as diet Islam or Islam light, for a lack of better words. Even if you read like the words of somebody who was the founder of the Ba'ath Party, Michel Aflaq, you know, he describes Muhammad as sort of like the role model for the Arabs, and that Muhammad gave, you know, Arab Christians an identity that they could be proud of. So that's sort of my convoluted way of explaining things.
And then you said something also fascinating. You said there was something intrinsic to Islam that almost made it kosher to dislike Jews?
Well, yeah. Jew hatred and anti-Semitism is quite embedded in Islam, from describing them as a cursed people to the Sunnah, the Hadiths. And then if you read the Tafsir, whether it's Tabari or Ibn Kathir, you know, it's quite explicit in their negative feelings towards the Jewish people.
So it kind of is a cover forward, gives you an excuse to hold those beliefs, which otherwise wouldn't be acceptable, say, in a Coptic environment. Makes perfect sense.
I'm not going to say that, you know, there aren't problematic people within the Coptic community who might have some ill feelings towards Jewish people, but it's definitely a minority. And growing up, I always felt like I was sort of the black sheep in the Coptic community just because of how I felt about Israel. Growing up, most of, you know, my parents, for instance, were Zionists. Most of my parents' friends, you know, supported Israel against the Palestinians. Yeah, it's definitely not a common opinion to have in the Coptic community.
Gosh, even that is so interesting. One would never have thought that they were Coptic Zionists. I never expected you to say that. Is that because they had left Egypt? Do you think that permitted them the space to identify?
I think it's because leaving Egypt definitely plays a role in that. I think for my dad, for instance, he came to the States, I think, in the late 70s. And I think when he came, you know, he just saw the world for what it was rather than what sort of like Egypt state media said it was. And my mom isn't the most political person, but I think for them, both of them, when they came to the States, that they just saw that the world is so completely different from what, Egyptian state media tells them the world is. And so that ended up having an impact on them, and their beliefs today.
So then, for almost 20 years, or at least 2 decades, you were a vocal sympathizer and advocate for the Free Palestine cause. What cemented your conviction in that cause during those years? What kept you?
It definitely goes back to, starting off in college, I met a lot of Arabs and Muslims, particularly a lot of Palestinians. And I live in Southern California, where there's a large Arab and Muslim community. And going back again, there's the overlap in the language, the culture. My parents, I grew up listening to the same music they did. We watched the same, Arabic movies. But more than anything, once you hear their stories, and that's what it is, it's stories, it sort of hooks you in. And, I did have friends whose parents, grew up in refugee camps. And it's definitely an emotional connection. You just, as someone who has quite a vivid imagination, I sort of like just played out all their stories in my head. And it gave me a sense of, this is something that I can fight for. And this would make me a just and righteous person. And it because of the cultural overlap, it did feel like very familiar.
That sets the background as to where you came from, and then this very monumental and significant change. Tell me about that. Was it instant? Was it gradual? How did the change come about?
Certainly gradual. I can't sit here and say that October 7th, what happened on October 7th, is what changed my mind. I wish I could say that, but that's not the case. The first moment that I had where I realized something was seriously wrong was a couple weeks. It was later in the month of October, October 2023. And I went to San Diego with my then girlfriend and our friends, and we were going bar hopping, walking from one bar to the other. We approached a red light, and at the red light, there was this sort of like structure in front of me. I saw the posters of the hostages, and I'm looking at the posters of the hostages, and all I can think about, the only thing that's playing in my mind, is how I saw people online and social media defacing the posters of the hostages, I think maybe in Toronto or New York City. And it felt like I had this moment to myself where I said, you might be a piece of crap, but you're not such a piece of crap that you would deface the poster of a hostage. I mean, it felt like the blood in my veins evaporated while I was looking at that posters. It was like the closest thing I've had to an outer body experience. To this day, it's one of the more cruel things that I can, recount from just the past 2 years regarding the conflict between Israel and the terrorists surrounding Israel. As much as I was supportive of the Palestinians to just tear down the posters of the hostages, it speaks of a unbelievable cruelty.
What's really interesting listening to you is I didn't realize it was as recent as all this. I mean, these fundamental, basic changes that you've made have only been over the last 2 years or so. I mean, that's quite something. Let's talk about the emotional and intellectual cost of having made a flip like you did. I would imagine there was very little in it for you in terms of social capital, friendship groups, etc. This is a lonely road.
It's not a lonely road. I'll correct you on that. It's not a lonely road. In the past, I would say that I lost my friends, the vast majority of my social circle. But the truth is, I got rid of them. I took the initiative to get rid of them. It's not like I publicly declared I was Zionist and lost my entire social circle. I did lose some of them when I publicly declared it, but I cut off and blocked 95% of my friends. And then I had this sort of like 5% left where I was like, okay, I have this pool of friends and I've actually sort of confided to a little bit. They've heard me speak out a little bit more. And maybe, I thought, maybe they can sort of see and understand my thought process. Those are the ones that I can say like I lost, like they, cut me off. But yeah, I sacrificed nearly my entire social circle, including people that I had known for, nearly 20 years, people who I sort of took for granted they would be at my wedding or be around when, I had kids and stuff like that. I'd been to their weddings. So, but it's not a lonely road. In fact, I'm part of a beautiful community, and it's something that I'm very much grateful for. The Jewish community has shown me a lot of forgiveness, love, support, and grace, and I don't feel alone.
It's interesting you use that word forgiveness. Why do you use the word forgiveness?
Because when I was going through this, there was this sort of internal battle where I was telling people, Jewish and Israeli people that I would meet online, sort of, you know, coming to my own with Zionism. I wouldn't tell them the truth at first. I didn't tell anybody the truth until I think around March or April of 2025. So between, you know, June of 2024 and March, April of 2025, I was telling, you know, my Jewish and Israeli friends that I had, you know, made along the way that, oh, well, you know, I'd always been pro-Israel and all this, and, you know, I'd always, you know, been supportive of Israel, which wasn't the case. But I told them that because I was afraid that had they known that I stuck with the Palestinian cause for so long in light of, you know, the most horrific attack on Jewish people since the Holocaust, that they would reject me, that they would look at me like I was some sort of monster. And that's how I felt about myself. I did feel like this, you know, sort of horrible person, this monstrous person. I mean, I could not have been more wrong, and I'm so happy that I was so wrong.
So interesting. You've spoken, you're on record as having said that you feel you have a debt to the Jewish people. I mean, that's a hell of a strong way of putting it. And I'm wondering, you know, why a debt?
I do feel like I owe them a bit of a debt. And it's even like, let's say I have a year debt, right? Like a year of service. Even if I stop feeling like I owe them a debt, I'd still want to do this. It's something that I feel very strongly about. I love what I do. I'm very proud of what I've been able to do thus far. But I'll tell you a story. So I started attending a local synagogue around the beginning of 2024. I realized, you know, I want to defend these people, but I actually don't know much about their religion. The way Judaism was always explained to me as a Christian was like, oh, it's like, you know, the first half of our religion. So like technically Christianity is like the sequel. I didn't really know much. And I went to, they ended up inviting me to Purim. You know, how they describe it as like Jewish Halloween. And it was really sweet. Like they had like, you know, the children had like this children's play, and at the end the congregants, most of whom are like, you know, older sort of elderly congregants, sort of on the cusp of being elderly, they gave me like this like little gift box filled with, you know, snacks and the hamantash and stuff like that. And I remember like driving back home that night and being really emotional. As happy as I was pretty emotional because they're just so sweet to me. Like, it's so, I'm not saying like every Jewish person is a saint, you know, Jewish people aren't a monolith. No. You have your good and bad eggs.
For sure.
But they're just so kind. And I felt so horrible, like on that drive back home, about just how I felt towards them. And like, I don't understand like how I have brought myself to hate them and be so against them. It was, you know, and to this day, I'm still active in that synagogue. I help them set up the sukkah tent for Sukkot. Whenever they need me, sometimes I'll go and volunteer, because like I said, they are on the older side, so they're not as mobile. Maybe they'll need like help moving stuff around in the temple. And I love doing it. I really enjoy it.
Michael, your perspective is so unique on this divide. You have access to people the likes of which we just don't. And I'm wondering what the core message is that you are able to or try to deliver to those people who come from similar backgrounds as yourself. Is there any bandwidth? Do they listen to what you have to say?
If you are on the pro-Palestinian side of things, the odds are that you're not going to listen to me. The odds are is that you've consumed so much propaganda that you're nearly unreachable. I've had a few people message me and tell me that after listening to me and sort of researching the things that I said, that they've come to see that it's the truth. But it's, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say it's a lot of people. It's, you know, 3-4 people, maybe max. You know, one thing I do make a point to say is that being a Zionist doesn't take away from anything that you already are. If you're Muslim, and being a Zionist doesn't invalidate your Islam. If you're Arab, being Zionist doesn't invalidate you being Arab. If you're a leftist, being Zionist doesn't invalidate you being a leftist. It's very tough to communicate with the other side because I know how poisoned they are, for a lack of better words. And you need to be aggressive with them. It's not, you know, Yasmin Muhammad actually put it in perfectly. She said, you can't fight fire with marshmallows. And you are dealing with a sort of universalist type way of thinking, in the sense that, okay, there's this alliance, there's the left-green alliance, so the alliance between Muslims and, you know, people on the left. And these are universalist ideologies that say the world must be this way, whether it's, under sort of like leftist policies or Islamist policies. And obviously those things clash with one another. But so you have to also take into consideration that like the existence of a Jewish state contradicts both those things, because in leftism, you don't want borders, you don't want countries, it's supposed to be this sort of like, communist utopia, the socialist utopia. And then for Islam, just the existence of a Jewish state sort of contradicts their entire theology, because in the Quran it says, unless they become Muslims or enter a treaty with the Muslims, aka become dhimmis, that they are poverty and abasement is sort of is to be pitched upon them eternally. And that's why both the left and the Muslims have such a huge issue with Israel, because it defies both those things.
You actually answered the very last question that I had for you this afternoon, but something else strikes me. Have you ever been to Israel? Has somebody got you on a
Not
plane and
yet.
got you yet? Have you
Not yet,
had a
but
plate of hummus and ful in Tel Aviv or Jaffa or wherever it may be? Because it reminds me, I've read about many years ago, I think her name was Mona Al-Tahawi or something like that, an Egyptian journalist who traveled the Middle East. And she said, besides Egypt, the place that she felt most at home was actually in Tel Aviv, that there was something remarkably similar to the lifestyle and the culture that you would be used to. So I think we'll need to get you there.
Hopefully next summer. That is my plan, is to visit next summer. I get a decent amount of time off in the summer, so it would be a smart idea to make use of it, even though I heard that the weather is brutal in the summer.
That's an
But
understatement.
I can't, beggars can't be choosers in that sense. But I really hope to go, because Israel is probably the only country I can visit in the Middle East at this point.
Probably. Michael Gamal, thank you for talking to me this afternoon. Thank you for your bravery and thank you for speaking out at this particular time in history. I think Jews worldwide are very, very appreciative of what it is that you are doing. So thank you.
Thank you so much to the Jewish community. I always say at the end of the day, I'm just a guy with a smartphone and a bunch of books. So it's really the Jewish community who have helped me so much, and I'm very, very grateful to them.